Today, featuring the Bible teaching ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a chapter-by-chapter, verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues his message, King Herod, as we pick up in Acts chapter 12, verse 1. And now, with today's study, here's Pastor Chuck.
Shall we turn now in our Bibles to Acts chapter 12? Now about that time, Herod the king stretched forth his hands to vex certain of the church. There are just a lot of Herods in the Bible, and it is a little difficult to keep them all straight. In fact, I don't expect you to keep them all straight. This particular Herod was Herod Agrippa the First. He was the grandson of Herod the Great, who was the Herod at the time of the birth of Jesus. Herod the Great had 10 wives. One of his wives, Miriam, had a son, Aristobulus, that was murdered by Herod the Great, as was Miriam. He felt that they were conspiring against him, and so he murdered them both. There was a saying during the time of Herod the Great that it was safer to be his pig than his son, and he actually murdered several of his sons. Aristobulus was one of them, but before Aristobulus was murdered, he had this son, Herod Agrippa. Herod Agrippa the First, the son of Miriam, who was a descendant of the Maccabeans. She was a direct descendant of the Maccabeans, which made her a Jewess. But she was married to Herod the Great. And so Herod Agrippa the First was sort of half Jewish in a sense. He was very interested in the Jewish customs and daily offered a sacrifice according to the Jewish law. He kept the Jewish customs. He spent some 30 years of his early life in Rome, but then came back and loved living in Jerusalem and was seeking to curry the favor of the Jews, living as the Jews lived, and he was highly respected by the Jews. And so this Herod Agrippa the First, the grandson of Herod the Great, began to persecute the church just to curry favor with the Jews. His son, Herod Agrippa the Second, was the one that Paul faced in Caesarea as Paul was actually being interrogated by him in order that they might develop charges against him when he was sent to Nero, for he had appealed to Caesar when he realized that he was getting the royal runaround by Festus, a political pawn, and he appealed to Caesar. Festus did not have any charges to send with Paul, and so he asked Herod Agrippa II, the son of this Herod Agrippa I, to hear Paul's case in order that they might develop charges against him to send to Nero when he was sent there. So about this time, Herod the king stretched forth his hands to vex certain of the church, and he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. James and John were called by Jesus the sons of thunder. They requested one day that they be granted to sit, one at the right hand and the other at the left hand of Jesus when he was in his kingdom. And Jesus said, "Are you able to be baptized with the baptism whereof I will be baptized?" And they said, "Yes, Lord, we are able." Jesus was talking about his death. And Jesus said, "Ye shall indeed be baptized with the baptism wherein I was baptized, but to grant to you to sit on my right hand and left hand is something that isn't really in my jurisdiction. That's given to the Father." So James is now following his Lord in martyrdom, the brother of John. And when Herod Agrippa saw that this pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to take Peter also. And then were the days of unleavened bread. On the 14th of Nisan, they began the feast of the unleavened bread. And so it was during this feast of the Passover that Peter was arrested. Now, according to their law, during the time of the feast of the Passover, they could not have any trials. And so he determined to bring him forth at the end of the feast of the Passover. You say, "Well, Jesus was tried during the feast of the Passover." We're correct, good students. But it was a thoroughly illegal trial. There were several illegal aspects of the trial of Jesus Christ. But he was intending to bring him forth for judgment and, of course, for execution at the end of the Passover period. And when he had apprehended him, he put him in prison, delivered him into four quaternions of soldiers to keep him. Not a quaternion was actually four soldiers. As a rule, a prisoner was chained his right hand to the left hand of the guard. And in Peter's case, because they wanted to keep him sure, he was chained on both sides to guards. And then there were two guards who would stand watch at the door. And four quaternions would mean that there were four groups of four soldiers. They served in 3-hour shifts around the clock in guarding the prisoner. So there were 16 soldiers altogether watching Peter in 3-hour shifts, at all times chained to two of them while two were watching the door. And they intended after, and it says Easter there. That's a King James translation. They did not know anything about Easter in the early church. The word in the Greek is Passover, after this time of the unleavened bread. But because Easter takes place during Passover season, because Jesus was crucified at the time of the Passover, he also rose again 3 days later. And so the Jewish Passover usually coincides closely with our Easter season. And because this was translated by the King James translators in 1600, and by this time this pagan celebration of Ashtart had invaded the church and was changed slightly to Easter instead of Ashtart, King James translators just translated this word Easter, because it does signify that same time of the year. Intending after Easter, or really after Passover, to bring him forth to the people. Peter, therefore, was kept in prison, but prayer was made without ceasing of the church unto God for him. And when Herod would have brought him forth, the same night, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains. And the keepers were before the door who kept the prison. And behold, the angel of the Lord came upon him, and a light shined in the prison. And he smote Peter on the side, and he raised him up, saying, "Rise up quickly," and his chains fell off of his hands. And the angel said unto him, "Gird yourself, bind on your saddles." And so he did. Gird yourself, that is, tie your skirt on up. When they would gird themselves, and the purpose of it is they wore these long robe kind of things. Well, it's hard to run in a robe. I've never really tried it, but I can imagine that it would be difficult to run in a robe. And so they would gird themselves up. That is, they would take the sash and they would pull the robe up to the knees. And then they would tie the sash so that the robe would then be short and they could run faster. And he's saying, gird yourself up. Always when you get ready to run, get ready to fight, or get ready to work, you would gird yourself up or get ready to serve. It was a action that you would take in order that you might have greater freedom of movement. Gird yourself up, tie in your sandals. And so he did. And he said unto him, put your garment on and follow me. And so he went out and followed him, and he knew not that it was true which was being done by the angel, but thought that he was just seeing a vision. He thought, this can't be real. You know, these chains have fallen off. I'm walking past these guards, and this can't be real. This is just a dream. This is just a vision. It's not really happening. And that, to me, is very interesting, how close the spiritual world was to these men, where they really didn't know if it was reality or just some spiritual revelation, but they lived very close to the spiritual world, to the spirit world. So when they were past the first and the second ward, they came to the iron gate that leads into the city, which opened to them of its own accord. And they went out, and they passed through one street, and then the angel departed from him. Now when Peter was come to himself, he said, I know of a surety that the Lord has sent his angel and has delivered me out of the hand of Herod and from all of the expectation of the people of the Jews. Finally, when the angel left and Peter was standing on the street, he said, hey, it wasn't a dream. I am out. Unreal, you know. And he realized that God had delivered him from the hand of Herod. So when he considered the thing, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark, where many were gathered together praying. Now go back to verse 5, where it says, but prayer was made without ceasing of the church unto God for Peter. So Peter came to the house where the prayer meeting was being held. The house of Mary, the mother of Mark, John Mark, who is the author of the gospel according to Mark. It is thought that her house was pretty much the headquarters of the church in Jerusalem. In fact, it is thought by some that the upper room was actually in the house of Mary, the mother of Mark. And as Peter knocked at the door of the gate, a damsel came to hearken, whose name was Rhoda. And when she knew Peter's voice, she did not open the gate for gladness, but ran in, little scatterbrain girl, and ran in and told how that Peter was standing at the gate. But they said unto her, you're crazy. But she constantly affirmed that it was true. And they said, it must be his angel. This to me is quite fascinating. Going back to verse 5. Peter therefore was kept in prison, but prayer was made without ceasing of the church unto God for him. So he comes to the place where the prayer meeting is being held. They're all inside praying, oh God help Peter, oh Lord deliver Peter and all. Now Rhoda comes running in and says, Peter's out at the gate. They said, you're crazy. Isn't it interesting how much emphasis we often put on faith? No, you got to have faith, brother. If you don't have faith, God's not going to answer your prayers. Well, let me tell you something. God's going to do what he wants to do, whether you have faith or not. The purposes of God are going to stand. Surely you cannot accuse these people of praying the prayer of faith. Because when they are told that God has answered the prayer, Peter is at the door, they don't believe it. They accuse the poor little girl of being crazy. And then they said, well, it must be his angel. must be a spirit. Surely it can't be Peter. But Peter just kept knocking. And so when they opened the door, they saw him and they were astonished. But he, beckoning unto them with a hand to hold their peace, don't make too big of a stir, fellas. They'll find out I'm here. He declared unto them how the Lord had brought him out of the prison, and he said, go and show these things unto James. Now, at this point, we are introduced to James, who became one of the leaders in the early church, who was a half-brother to Jesus. And he began to take a very strong role of leadership in the early church. James, the brother of John, has been put to death by Herod. But this other James, who will write an epistle after his name, and who will take a role of leadership in the council in Jerusalem, is not the James of the gospel, except that Mark does name him as one of the half-brothers of Jesus. So, introducing now to you James, half-brother to Jesus, who will now begin to take a more dominant role in the early church. And so Peter says, go show these things unto James and to the brethren. And he departed and went into another place. James, the brother or half-brother of Jesus, did not believe the claims of Jesus during his lifetime. In fact, James thought that his brother Jesus was mad, and at one time sought to rescue him from the crowds. He said he's beside himself, and they came down to rescue him. It is said, according to the gospel, I think it is according to the Hebrews, or the gospel of the Hebrews, in one of the Apocrypha books, they have James saying, after the death of Jesus and reported resurrection, that he said, I will not believe unless I can see him myself. And interestingly enough, Jesus, after his resurrection, did appear unto James, as Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians chapter 15:7. He made an appearance to his half-brother. And after that point, his half-brother James and his half-brother Jude became pillars in the early church. And so, go show these things to James, to the brethren. And he departed and went to another place. He figured that they would be coming to Mary's house looking for him. And so he no doubt went to hide out from Herod. So he went to another place. Now, here we have an interesting enigma. Herod stretched forth his hand against the church, and he killed James, the brother of John, with a sword. And he put Peter in prison, intending to bring him forth for trial and execution. But God intervened and miraculously delivered Peter. Question, why didn't God intervene and miraculously deliver James? Now, don't try to figure out an answer because we don't know. The ways of God are beyond our finding out. We know that God could have delivered James by a miracle, even as he delivered Peter. But for some reason, God did not see fit to deliver James, but allowed James to fall prey to Herod's sword, though he did see fit and purposed that Peter should be delivered from Herod's sword. And I don't think the prayers of the church were the deciding factor, because as we noted, the prayers obviously were not prayers of faith. I believe the deciding factor was just the purpose of God, the sovereignty of God. As far as God was concerned, it was James' time to come home. It wasn't Peter's time yet. I believe that all of our lives are bound within the purposes of God, and that God knows the day in which he's going to take me home. It's all set. God knows exactly the day and the circumstances by which he's going to take me home. And God has, in the meantime, a work for me to do. And until I have accomplished that work that God has in mind for me to do, God's going to preserve me and keep me till that day. But the moment I have accomplished that purpose of God and plan for my life, then God's going to take me home. In the book of Revelation chapter 11, we read concerning the two witnesses that come to bear witness during the tribulation period upon the earth. And it says that they have power to call down fire from heaven. They have power to shut up heaven that it does not rain during the period of their prophecy. And if anybody should try to take them, they can call down fire from heaven and consume them. And yet the scripture said, and when they had finished their testimony, then the Antichrist has power to put them to death. But not until they have finished their testimony.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of Acts on our next broadcast as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. This message has been provided to you by the generous supporters of the Word for Today. For additional information about how you can support this ministry, please visit us online at thewordfortoday.org. There you'll find free message downloads from Pastor Chuck, as well as links to our podcast and other resources to help you grow in your Christian walk. You can also call us at 1-800-272-9673, or you can order a physical copy of today's message by mentioning Acts 12. Again, that phone number is 1-800-272-9673. Our office hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. Join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck.
Now may the Lord bless you and be with you and keep you in his love through the grace of Jesus Christ as we look forward to that glorious day of the Lord when he comes for us that we might be with him in his eternal kingdom, world without end. God bless you, and may the strength of the Lord be your portion this week. In Jesus' name.
We say that love makes the world go round, that love is the answer, that all you need is love. You might even say we glory in the power of love. But what is love? If it's so popular, then why does it seem so hard to find? Author and pastor Chuck Smith has spent a lifetime not only pondering the nature of genuine love, but also learning through experience what true love is, what it does, and how it transforms everything it touches. In this rich, encouraging, and deeply practical book, he describes how every one of us can come to experience and share the kind of world-changing love that continuously pours from the very heart of God, the original lover himself. You can order this book at twft.com or by calling 1-800-272-9673. I'm your host, Kathy Parrish. Thanks for listening.
Little country church on the edge of
This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.